there during World War II, but it hadn't exploded. I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News Department. By the way, it's about 22 or 23 degrees, going up to 35 or 36 later today. Back to Clayton Riley in WBAI this morning.
All right, it's 9 o'clock in the city. The city being New York. This is Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. And we continue. Let me say to you also that some of the back and forth that continues is quite fascinating, particularly given what happened yesterday. We'll just make this very brief note about the program that appeared actually on another, what do we call it, another band, another radio band, wherever, and appeared and was to be aired here and subsequently was not. I love the way people think they're saying something very good, and maybe in their view they are. We talked earlier, you heard the tape of the so-called Democracy Now! Program. My feeling, I had always thought that Democracy Now! Was a program to deal with world and national issues that are today quite vital and prominent among us, and not a program used simply to attack folks who, at one time at least, were co-workers, were colleagues. But that is what we had yesterday. This is a wonderful note. Also appearing on the program were comedian Dick Gregory, Professor Noam Chomsky, Leslie Kagan, the new chair of the Pacifica Board, Daily News columnist in Democracy Now!, co-host Juan Gonzalez, way down at the bottom of the list, Bernard White, also appeared on the program. Don't you love that? I mean, hey, wow, yeah. As an afterthought, let us remind you that he was also here. You know, he managed somehow to struggle in among our midst. But the really important people, the people who really count, Noam Chomsky. And, of course, we had a comedian right up at the top because, obviously, the black people we greatly cherish. You know, those long line of minstrels, the comedians, those are the people we embrace most vigorously. Isn't it just wonderful? Okay. We go on and on. The struggle will continue. Nobody knows where it's going to go right now. I will say simply that we are going to fight our fight and seek to prevail. We know who the enemy is. We know who the enemy has been. Those of us who have continued to broadcast here, and most particularly to broadcast and do as much as we can to bring solid, informative radio to our listeners. And increasingly, we have heard from listeners expressing a great appreciation for that. Since 9/11, most particularly, we have heard from people, I think, who feel very strongly about the things that have happened. I recall during the time we were broadcasting from Armand DeMille's facility over on 57th Street. And again, right there, you talk about the sense of solidarity, the enormous generosity of Armand DeMille at that time, saying, hey, you know, you can't get into Wall Street right now. Come and do it here. Gary Nell, same thing. People who said, look, this is a time not to be cleaved and separated, not to be pushed apart. This is time to be coming closer together. Let old wounds heal. The thing that is most disturbing, in my judgment, about what has happened recently is you have one group of people who have said, my way or the highway. There is no negotiation. There will never be any attempt to sit and see if differences can be resolved because we hate you that much that we will not even sit and talk with you as though you are other human beings. Because, in fact, the dissidents believe they are the only human beings on this planet. We are going to do this. And Paul Williams, as I noted, is at the controls. We're not going to brook any foolishness. I know some of you do indeed have things to say. And if you want to act like grown-ups, if you want to deal with things as adults, we will be perfectly happy to give you time on the air to do that. But remember that our provision here, our standard here is this. There are a lot of people calling. And if you want to act the fool, we'll give the next person an opportunity to act the fool. And if that person has a bit of time, we will keep moving until we hear from some folks who have something in our judgment. And our judgment for this time will prevail. Our judgment will have something to say. All right? The number is 209-2900. It's 9:06 in the morning, and it is indeed. Oh, it's up to 25. Oh, leave that scarf home. You know, it's up to 25 degrees already in New York City. WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Riley. How
yes,
are you?
I'm fine.
Okay, good. I think that your show is the biggest buck dance minstrel show there is. I
okay.
say that because...
Say
like,
goodbye.
I mean, you're...
Say goodbye.
You're...
I say it again. I'll say it again. If you want to act the fool, we'll move on to the next fool. WBAI, you're on the air. Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. You're on the air.
Yes.
Turn your radio off. You should know that by now.
Okay. Clayton, I just my name is Denise, and I'm from New York, and I'm just having a problem with what you're saying because it just sounds like misinformation.
Really? Give me the real information.
The real information is that certain people were removed from the air.
Including myself. Including me, but why? Let me ask you a question.
And it's a fair fight.
Okay,
and
let me
want
ask
them
you.
Back.
Let me ask you a question about misinformation. Why, when the dissidents list those who have banned and fired, why isn't my name on that list?
Well, why don't you see to it that your name is on the list?
I can't see that my name is on the list because the dissidents refuse adamantly even to speak to me.
I'm glad to hear
you're not for that.
Yes, what I'm for is that this is one WBAI community, and we need to work together.
It's not one WBAI community.
It's
and
split.
You should disabuse yourself of the notion that it is one,
it's not.
Yes, it is.
That's right. Okay. So how are we going to come together? Well, the problem that I'm having, Clayton, is right now I really respect Amy as a journalist. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and I respect her work, and it's really hard for me to hear you say these things. Say the things that you're...
Tell me specifically what you're talking about.
Why do you need to talk about her show? Because that's one perspective.
What did we say about her show?
Her show is excellent.
Well, what did I say about the show that would countermand
that? Well, I heard you and Paul, you know, talking about it quite a bit.
Well, what did we say?
You're talking about it as, you know... I don't need to repeat your words.
Okay, well, then say goodbye to us. If you can't repeat the words, then let's not have the conversation.
So that's the end of the conversation?
Yeah, that it is. It is.
Okay.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning. How are you doing, Clayton?
I'm here.
I've been listening to you and the position of your group for a while and also the position of the dissidents also for a while. I've noticed a couple of things, and I would like to express them. And of course, then I would appreciate if you can give me a chance, and then to say what I want to say, and then
go right
talk.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one thing I noticed is that a couple of people were thrown out of the station, which are they call themselves the band, and definitely they were banned from the station. If they tried to go in, they would be thrown to jail, which is not good at all in a radio station. That stands for free speech.
Okay, let me ask you a question on that point. Why were they banned?
Well, it was never told on the air.
Oh, it didn't have to be told on the air. It had to be told, my friend. It had to be told to them. And it was told to them.
Well, it is time for free speech. Mm-hmm. You've got to let the people that support the station, that pay for the station to go on every 3 months or every 4 months.
All right, let me make a point here, if I may. When you have a situation involving someone who has been banned or fired from any workplace, and that banning or firing could eventually result in legal action, it is inappropriate to discuss such a matter on the air for the precise reason that the people who are compromised by such a discussion are the banned and the fired. Do you follow what I'm saying? In other words, if you're building a case for your inappropriate banning or firing, you don't want... It's the same as you were involved in any legal matter. I think one of the first things you say, you don't want people going on the radio and talking about it if it's going to compromise your case.
Well, maybe I hear that you have a point, but I'm not totally into the details, so I cannot say that is real or is not. But
all right, but what I'm trying to say to you is that not being totally into the details, it seems to me you would want to listen to what some of the details, at any rate, are. And the fact is, I will say to you, in those cases with which I'm familiar, I'm not familiar with all of them, there were people who were banned, and there were people who were fired for cause. Now, if you're fired and there is no cause for your firing, what do you do? What would you do if in your place of employment you walked in and the guy said you're fired? And you said, well, why? Did I do something inappropriate? Have I committed a crime? Why am I being fired? And they said, we don't have to give you a reason. Many people would take legal action. Many people would call a lawyer. Well, I haven't seen that happen with any of the banned and or the fired here.
Well, look at one of the things, what the station stands for and what the principles are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're trying to build an organization that is progressive, mm-hmm, and that tries to stand for a new way of doing not only radio, but are trying to set an example for progressive organizations. Because many people out there that have been kicked out of their jobs, they are sick and tired of the way America is being run by corporations and the irresponsible way in which people are thrown to the street. I mean, some people have unemployment insurance, but in some other states that doesn't exist. And even more, corporations are not even democratic places. And I really dislike the way the organization Pacifica has been handled. And I think that finally there has been a better solution, which was the three different groups, which are the five of the past directors, which were most corporate people from corporate America.
Well, that's not true.
Well, some of them have
Who were they?
Oh, I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't need to know the name.
You need to know the names if you're going to pursue this line of assertion here. It seemed to me you would have found out who they were. If you feel so strongly about this, if you're going to be so adamant about it, why didn't you get information?
Well, I've been getting the information, but let me tell you, there are
do you know the names?
Do you know the names? I'm trying to fight this war.
Okay, so do you know the names of the dissidents? Do you know the names of the dissident group?
No, I don't know all the names.
You know,
I know there are five groups. I know there's three groups.
Okay, but do you know?
Five members.
I'm asking you a question here, if I may, if you will allow.
Knowing the names of these people is not totally relevant to the discussion.
Okay, well then, if it's not totally relevant to the discussion, I will say to you, this discussion is over. Say goodbye to me.
Well, I think that you just
say
can't.
Goodbye.
You just can't.
Say goodbye. All right, we got a lot of phones ringing here. It's 9:14, incidentally. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Well, what is up?
How are you?
I'm here.
Yeah? Would you like to go to protests?
Why don't you stop chewing? Haven't
Sorry.
You finished your breakfast yet?
Yeah, I actually just had my little first bite of granola.
Say goodbye.
Crunchy.
Okay, so long.
Wait.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The things you were discussing this morning are real close to me. I can't put them in order. What we'll talk about the little Cato case, Cousin Al Sharpton and Cousin Alton Maddox even went to Israel to see about what they did in that case. And we were having our meetings in the public school on 34th Street at that time.
134th Street. I do remember that very
you
vividly.
Do?
Yes, of course, because
I was
there.
Good. And then recently Gene Griffith called. Well, you remember the Griffith case? Well, also a relative of theirs. I don't remember what it was, but he and our other little sister were being reported to the Amsterdam News. They were chased and deprived of their cameras. We had two or three meetings where the policeman who charged our little 105-pound reporter, beating him up, always postponed, and it's been postponed all these years and never taken up. And then, of course, the school thing that you promoted this morning, we know McCall has had the experience with the Board of Education and these things. You are very important to me, and I do thank you for listening, and I'm going to physically try to get to the meeting.
I thank you very much for calling and for your pledge to attend that meeting.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to continue moving along with your calls. It's 9:60, make it 9:17 in the morning. It's a chilly 25 degrees, so you want to dress warm when you get outside. WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Clayton. Carol from Jersey City. How are you this
morning? I'm fine, thank you.
You know, I'm on your side. Thank you very much, men, for showing a lot of backbone. Unfortunately, people are living on this so-called dream that was yesterday instead of moving on. And I appreciate your broadcast. And people should take one-on-one broadcasting and communication and start fighting the FCC and what Powell's doing to the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that you're in this so-called, a lot of folks who want to broadcast and bring radio into the community of what's going on. We have to spend all this BS on this topical B-crap on Democracy Now, whatever it is.
Well, that may be precisely the reason that's being done. Because,
right.
You know, in recent times, what has happened is that there has been a decided, some might even say a sea change, a decided shift in the way of responding to this radio station. More and more people from communities of color have been listening and been responding during the drives.
Mm-hmm.
And so you match that with the fact that we have people who want to cloud the landscape with, as you say, an awful lot of foolishness.
Correct.
I think for precisely the reason that there are people who cannot stand the notion that this kind of change would take place. You know, when I came to BAI for the first time in the late 60s,
I remember
one black broadcaster here.
It was Roscoe, I believe. No, it was
Julius Lester.
Julius Lester, correct.
And
right.
Some of the people who are still here were adamantly opposed to the notion that there be more than one.
Correct, correct.
Okay, and so if you want to talk about why all this foolishness is going on, and incidentally, let me be clear about something, too. There are two things to talk about here. And one of them is not, incidentally, white people.
Correct.
In my judgment, the real talk is about the culture of whiteness.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
And keeping it that way.
All right.
Correct. Got you on that. As well as, you know, in the sense that my cousin was editor of Black Sports Magazine years ago. I don't know if you remember that publication or not.
I worked there.
Okay. My name is Carol Barron.
Okay.
And my cousin passed a couple years ago.
Yes, I didn't know that.
Yes, and it was the same type of headache. But where's the backbone? There's no backbone. Where's the so-called backbone of men, you know, and as well as women? You know, we walk around wimpy, talking about, you know, what was yesterday, instead of moving on what's going on with our children, what's going on with our community. This is very, very important. And unfortunately, we have to worry about what, you know, what is so-called, quote, good journalism, which to me is not really good journalism, if you get my drift. It's just the fact that, you know, we have people that used to come on in the morning a year and a half ago, used to blow their horn, and instead of being leaders, they're followers.
Yeah.
And I wish as a people that we lead ourselves. I mean, it's been written in the stone. We have to stop waiting for the so-called Moses and the kings to lead us out. It's been written in the stone. It's time for us to get off our ass and start doing what we have to do.
Well, you know who said that, I thought, very effectively? That the sad thing was he was so criticized for it at the time. The basketball player Charles Barkley
was
asked by a reporter when they said, why don't you be a role model for your community?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't need to be a role model for anybody else's children but mine.
Correct.
Everybody in the community should be a role model. Let all people be role models instead of picking out an individual like me to be one.
Correct. Correct.
Listen, I want to thank you for calling, and
I do
appreciate your support.
Definitely.
All right, we're going to speak now with our radio station's public affairs director, Jabel Fye, has joined us. Pretty sharp today, brother man. Is there a party?
Today.
Is there a party somewhere I don't
know
about? All right, you got me. You got me. All right, point well taken.
I just stay at home in Senegal, you know, when you truly want to compliment somebody, just like, man, you look sharp.
Oh,
you know?
Okay, that's
and
enough.
It makes me feel like even yesterday.
Yeah, all right.
But anyway, you know, it's a pleasure to be here, Clinton. How are you?
Well, hey, man, you know, as I am wont to say as much as I can, the struggle continues, and it ought to continue.
It ought to continue, and you're brave. I must give you that one.
Lutte continue. You got it, and we will continue because the struggle is quite necessary. I want to ask you something about the events of yesterday. Now, my understanding is, and of course you clarify it, that you received a telephone call, and it was your impression that you were receiving a phone call.
Yeah.
What, in fact, were you receiving?
Well, actually, I realized that I was on the air live on Democracy Now! When people came in the office and told me, Jabel, I mean, what is he doing on the program, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the phone, actually, mind you, when the people waving at me, trying
right.
to tell me that I'm on. What is interesting is that yesterday I walked past Fred, and Fred, our receptionist here, go take, I guess, the brunt of some of the, you know, comments and calling, you know, what you call it, calling complaints and so on and so forth. I heard him struggling, and I saw him struggling. He looked at me and said, Jabel, you're going to have to take this one. I looked at him, I said, let me put Fred off the hook. And he said, this is Michael Moore on the phone. You want to take him? I said, okay, Fred, I'll take him. So I went in the office, I took it, and I proceeded to talk to him. As you may, actually, if you heard the report
yes.
yesterday, you hear that the sound quality wasn't even actually for broadcast in many different ways, because probably it went through so many different channels before it gets to me. So as I'm talking to Michael, and when I finished the conversation, Marjorie and Paul came and told me that, Jabel, you were on the air, live.
Well, one of the other aspects of this you should know is that the tape, however poor the quality was at that time, was subsequently damaged to the point where it could not be played later. And the question, of course, will continue. Who would choose to damage a tape that was, in fact, the property of the news department? So we can wonder about that. The point, Jabel, that I think needs to be made over and over to people who are listening to us is that we have, throughout this struggle, seen this division, a division between people who have chosen to do radio on this air, to do their jobs, to go into places. And I will be very blunt for people inciting. Jabel Fye went to Africa so that we could be in touch with the events at Durban, when others were saying, well, he doesn't need to go. I mean, an African doesn't need to go to Africa to report. We got white folks here in New York who can cover that event. But my point is this. There have been people at this radio station who said, let's do radio.
Yeah.
Let's do programs.
Yeah.
There are other people who have said, let's stab folks in the back. Let us, incidentally, and I want this to be very clear to the board when we have an opportunity to speak to members of the board. We have had people here who, under the guise of being champions of free speech and of progressive politics have secretly recorded the conversations of their colleagues, have done this as a regular practice.
Yes.
And so many of you out there, some of you who are listening to us, who are colleagues of ours at this station, may not even know which of your conversations were recorded and how those tapes were used. But we do know and could substantiate and can prove conclusively that people at this station who are now proclaiming how important they are to the Pacifica tradition have been wearing wires in order to undermine the effectiveness of people they claim are or were their colleagues.
You know, Clayton, what is more than amazing about the situation, last weekend I came across a lynch tab on your head and Utrecht's head.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe it. They literally had a lynch. They have a picture of a lynch lady.
Oh, yeah.
Literally lynched. And then they clearly said that basically these two, you and Utrecht, there's a price on your head,
right,
and this and so and so on and so forth.
And I will say to you that the so-called dissident faction involved in all of this has consistently projected that kind of hatred, that kind of racism, that kind of bigotry. Let me explain also that during the time in a prior life, when I was broadcasting at this station in the morning, I received a total of 76, actually, if you remember, I got one, 76 letters during the time I was broadcasting in this morning frame, every single one of them denouncing my color and my race in supporting the dissident action, in saying we support this person, we support that person, and this is how we feel about you. Not because, you know, you don't think I'm a good broadcaster, not because you don't think I do my homework or the rest of it, because you are an-dash. Incidentally, it's amazing how silent the dissidents have been about the emails that characterize one of our colleagues here as the N-dash lover. Now, you know where that expression comes from. You know the history of it. And this has been a common thread of dissident communication during this period. And the truth has got to start to come out. We have, I think, been quite, in my judgment, rather circumspect in dealing with this toward the end of doing programs. Okay? Toward the end of doing programs. We thought we were here because we're supposed to be involved in broadcasting radio. We're joined by, now I don't want to make a connection here with anything I just said.
I love that Steve Martin movie where he thought he was black. Remember that Steve Martin? I thought I was black. Wait a second. Only Italian. Wait a second.
Paul Di Rienzo. But Paul, I want to get the point really, and I think this is where this is to me what seals the discussion we're having now that Javelle and I have gotten into. There has been a commitment at this radio station to doing radio, to doing the job, to bringing to people alternative views of many things, to bringing to people interpretations of events that simply are not available. And incidentally, not available in an increasing sense in the other areas of journalism. We know that right now, for example, there is almost a blanket endorsement of the war, so-called, which can hardly be called that, it seems to me, in Afghanistan. So if you want to hear something else about what's going on in Afghanistan, you come here. Well, that's what you're supposed to hear. Now, let me say this again. I would have been very much in favor of broadcasting Democracy Now! At 9 o'clock if we had had any sense that it was going to be a program that looked at the issues, which incidentally, in all fairness, has been the substance of that program at times in the past.
But you see the political problem. I mean, the dissident movement faces a tremendous internal contradiction. And, you know, as a political analyst, I can't help but see it so clearly that one of the so-called fired bans, suspended, or actually in this case, self fired, self-banned, and self-exiled person is coming back without the other supporters,
mm-hmm.
many of whom got their ticket punched, took a fall on the sword, etc., for this movement. And, you know, obviously that is a very difficult problem, especially if you're a guilt-ridden person in the first place.
No, but Paul, you have to understand that in every war, you have the minesweepers and the bomb sniffers. No.
The guys who dig up the mines after the war.
I mean, this is real. Because when I looked at the situation, I said to myself, it's one thing to be chosen as a bomb sniffer. It's another thing to choose yourself when you know you're not trained to be one, which means that eventually it's going to blow in your face. You know. But I want you guys to understand one thing. What really disturbed me yesterday about being broadcasted without knowing it is the fact that our so-called interim chair of the board, the person who actually claims to somehow have the right and basically the mandate to affect programming, suggest programming, and go as far as basically drafting a memo to that tune, basically the memo that everybody's saying that, yeah, we have gotten it, so we're supposed to play it because we got the memo. This is one of the person involved in inciting me in talking into a live broadcast without knowing that this is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And this same person also is basically so much on Amy's side that I think that the whole process needs to be rechecked. The whole process has to be rechecked literally. Because I want to know how legal is that for her to be in that position and still be in that program, behave in that way, and also involved in exposing me to a certain degree where I could have said something terrible. I could have literally went off.
Yeah.
And what would happen? They say, well, this is Jebel Fai.
Mm-hmm.
Now the issue is that I want to take it far. I want the people to look into it. Michael Moore, you know, he's an outsider. He doesn't care. I'm pretty sure it was a joke as far as I'm concerned. But the people inside should know better, especially Leslie Kagan. I was very, and I'm still very disappointed about the fact that she's behind that.
Okay, Jebel, you mentioned Michael Moore, and we may as well put this out too. Michael Moore, big union activist, big union protector, broadcasting from a non-union facility. I mean, you want to talk about hypocrisy. Now, here's the other thing that I think we really need to pursue. This memo came to us as a fax, first of all, and that's questionable right there. This memo ordering, literally, the program to be put back on, signed by one person, although it was said this was the pleasure of the board. Well, why didn't the board sign the memo or sign the fax? The other thing is, there is included in that order the personal pronoun, I. Not we, I order you to do this. So we understand very clearly what this brouhaha is all about. And it is about an individual joining with another individual who was heard from this morning, the secretary of the new board, joining to establish here a kind of board and broadcast situation that was the sort they complained against in the first place. Remember what they said about the previous board? It was dictatorial. It was governed by corporate vultures. Well, if we were to use a term, for example, like progressive vultures, who have taken...
You can use corporate because, you know, I don't want to... Let's put it this way. I looked at the crawl of a certain cable television program that was in exile somewhere, and at the end of that program, when you saw the grants they got, right at the top was the Rockefeller Fund.
Okay.
And every other... I wish, you know, all of a sudden they yanked it off the air, so you can't get it anymore.
I guess Michael Moore didn't see that.
Yeah, no, I was hoping that somebody...
One second, fellas, that I don't get the hook like they used to have at the Apollo Theater. This is WBAI Pacifica Radio from the city.
Right. So, but you know, I think the union thing is important there because I think that's something that people don't realize is that we are governed. Pacifica at the national level is governed by a contract with AFTRA, the the American Federation of Television and Radio, which we are all members of here at WBAI. But the national local, which is a different local than ours,
has a contract with Pacifica Radio. Although we depend and love our volunteers and work very well with volunteers here at WBAI and the other four stations, at the national level, they actually have a contract that precludes the use of volunteers. Everybody has to get paid when you work at national level.
Okay.
And so, therefore, the fact that you have unpaid workers on a program covered by a national contract is more than a little bit problematical. I mean, that, you know, we can take a program from an independent producer that is in a non-union shop, or it could be in the Indy Media Center or something, which is a non-union shop, for example, and or Downtown Community Television, which is a non-union shop, or, you know, we can take that programming and we can play that programming as an independent contractor. But when that person says they are, in fact, an employee of Pacifica, then they are in violation of the contract. And that is a union busting.
Yeah, I agree.
Real union busting, in which a real union that has 80,000 members is risking something that could undermine its contracts with other places.
Well, Paul, I'm really pleased that you bring that up, because all these issues, remember, rest with people at a radio station who invariably have, or certainly should have, a deep and abiding concern with union issues. When people talk about coming out of the labor movement, when people talk about progressive politics, all of this in the history of America is associated with the long struggle of the labor movement in this country. And then for people to have an opportunity to advance that and suddenly turn out to say, in a sense, I don't know if you remember the British, but no, yes, it's, you're too young to remember.
I read a lot.
British film came out of, I think Peter Sellers actually was in it. It was called I'm All Right, Jack. And it was about the British labor movement and the expressions that some of the workers would say when they were divided on the issue of returning to the workplace, a union contract. And some of the workers would be given special perks or benefits. And they would say with the others, well, hey, I'm all right, Jack. You all have to take your own piece with the rest of this agreement or disagreement. Well, this is what we have now. People are saying, my understanding was that Democracy Now! Would not return to the air in the absence of a group of colleagues who were characterized as the band in the fight. Well, I didn't see any of that in place yesterday. And let me remind people again that when the band and abandon the fire to return, I want to see my name on that list. Okay? I was fired.
There was an ideological litmus test that I wish didn't even really raise to the level of ideological litmus test. It's a clique friend, backslapping elitism, snobbish ideology that, you know, it's called snobism. And, you know, the rule of snobism has been overthrown at WBAI. And believe it or not, the airwaves here are more free and they're open to other people. There was a caller earlier who said, I love Democracy Now! I have so much respect for Amy as a journalist. Well, there's other great journalists here.
I would hope so. Listen,
there are. And you know, and it's not right to turn Pacifica or BAI into some cult.
Now listen, I don't want to pit anybody against anybody else, and on that particular issue, but you know, somebody who I don't hear praised enough, in my judgment, either here or in the press, is a man who comes on the air here on Thursday afternoon, named Doug Henwood. Now, if you want to talk about journalism, if you want to talk about a guy who really does the homework and gets it on the air, I don't have any objection to people praising Amy Goodman or anybody else here.
She's done a lot of good work, but I don't have to agree with everything she's done. It's not an act of, you know, they've raised her to the point where if you disagree with something she says or reports or does, you become object or subject to attack, ridicule, and scorn. And what's progressive about that?
But let me ask a question. Jabel, I particularly want to point this to you. As I'm sure you've noted, and Paul certainly has, that the essential design of Pacifica in its origins was to promote the idea that a collective could bring forth a kind of radio broadcasting that was previously unknown in this country. And I submit that when you start designing in a radio station a cult of personality, when you start to say, well, the only issue here is this person, this individual, the others be damned.
Right.
That you have gone precisely against the notion of the mission you claim to be advancing.
And it even affected the board itself. The interim board, if you look at it the way it is constituted, with the majority and the minority, at least
yes.
I think in three different parties,
yes.
is actually a result of what you just spoke about. That's how the trickle-down effect of that
mm-hmm.
Cult of personality, how deep it is. It brought it straight into the board, and that's what basically
right.
Got us into this
situation. Play off, if you will, for a moment, the comment of one of our earlier presidents, Abraham Lincoln, you will recall, said, a house divided against itself will not stand. Cannot stand.
And my last understanding is that the Pacifica Network is now, I'm hearing, $4 to $5 million in the hole because
yeah.
of this.
Yeah.
Their boycott was so successful, even though we had five record-breaking fundraisers
yeah.
at five different stations,
mm-hmm.
we are still $4 to $5 million in the hole, not because of a successful boycott. They're giving themselves much too much congratulations, because it
mm-hmm.
wasn't. It was because of the legal bills that have been ensnared on the Pacifica Foundation in the battle of five specious lawsuits
mm-hmm.
that every lawyer I have talked to and every single person I have talked to who knows anything about corporate law, who knows anything about fighting corporations, and who's involved in public relations and public service, tells me would never have lasted a minute, would have failed. And that's why the dissidents were so hot to trot to settle those.
Well, you know, one of the things that comes out of that, Paul, and I'm glad you brought that aspect of it up here. If the dissidents had been in the position they claimed, that is, that their righteousness was at the center of their effort, it seems to me that what they would have said is, look, let's not boycott. Let's go ahead
right.
and raise as much money for the station, because we're going to win. We're going to prevail in this
they
argument.
They never thought, right to
so
this minute, they're afraid.
Right.
Right to this minute, they're scared they might lose it somehow. Something
okay.
weird is happening, and that they're going to be, they're deathly afraid that somebody, whether it be Amy, or whether it be Leslie, or whether it be somebody they don't know, is somehow working some secret conspiracy back deal, and that's why we're here, and Bonocracy I wasn't here, and all this stuff. And that, you know, they're willing to believe that kind of stuff, and they're easily led around, I'm afraid,
well,
by the nose.
One more aspect of this is that if, in fact, I think reason had been prevailing among the dissidents, this, it seems to me, would have been an approach. You would have said, look, we're not boycotting our own radio station. That's unacceptable. We will participate in fundraising. We will see that as much money is raised. And even if we say a portion of it should be put in escrow for certain activities that must be maintained or for certain eventualities that may occur, but we will see that as much money as possible is raised, because then you would have, see, if you, the other way around, you're protesting because you think you're going to lose.
Well, you
so,
know, we don't,
but Paul, let me do this aspect of it. In that, you would have then said, we all have to sit down and negotiate internally a settlement satisfactory to all of us, which means what? Everybody's going to have to give up to get. All right? You got to give up a little to get
why?
Some. And you compromise on those issues which do not demean you, but you say, look, okay, in order to have a settlement that is satisfactory to the bulk of the people here, let us say we will do all we can publicly on the air to see that as much money is raised so that the station remains solvent, and we work out the difficulties ourselves.
Let me tell the New York listeners something that they might not understand about this struggle. That this struggle began years ago, and it came to its point, to its pinnacle in a battle over the station in California, KPFA. And the folks at KPFA fought what they said was a corporate takeover, an attempt to sell their station, although they never established that. In fact, I went along with a lot of those demands, because you always make hyperbolic demands in a struggle and claims, and that's all it ever was, we're going to sell the station. A very hyperbolic thing based on an email somebody dug out of somebody's computer illegally by going into their computer. So, you know, you can find something in anybody's computer, as Steve Yasko found, that somebody can use in a detrimental or disgusting
sort of
way. And Juan Gonzalez knows a lot about that. And having gone on Flashpoint with Dennis Bernstein and discussed it. You know, the point being is that, you know, that folks in California
who are listeners to BAI, many of whom are extremely wealthy people, really could care less about the WBAI. It's just a foil and a tool in their struggle to make sure they don't lose their radio station, because they're not willing to accept the fact that KPFA is part of a network with four other stations.
Mm.
And I say to them at KPFA in Berkeley, and I say to Carol Spooner, you're able to spend millions of dollars raised and out of your own pocket and of your own time in order to destroy the Pacifica Foundation so as to save it. Sounds like Vietnam. Why didn't you raise that same money and just buy the damn thing?
That's right. You know,
because you never could have. It was worth too much, and you could never have dealt at that level.
Well, let me say something. I asked one of the attorneys, who's a member of the local advisory board, what this possibility would be. Suppose the local advisory board started a movement to say this: we will petition Pacifica to sell us the radio station, and what we will ask for is a right of first refusal of 1 year with an additional option of 6 months. In other words, you have 18 months to raise the down payment.
Right.
Okay.
So the NYC did it.
Well, exactly.
But I know why. You know, this is the second part of what I'm saying, because before, and, you know, people say, well, we don't get to see the tally figures as people are raising money. Well, tell me, you know, we used to be able to see it, and then I think it was way many years before Utrecht came on the scene that they started hiding that book.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, they started hiding the book, which showed how much money individual producers were bringing in about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, you know why? Because I used to go and make a point of looking through it and comparing how everybody made. I'm a very statistical person, and I wanted to know how I was doing compared to everybody else and how everybody was doing. So I used to watch what people made, and I knew that the vast majority of programmers on BAI were not paying for the airtime that they were they were using. They were expected and expecting people, because of their, for whatever reason, that everybody else was going to raise the money for them to be on the air, and
exactly.
They would not have no responsibility.
Sure.
And that was the same, also the situation in KPFA in Berkeley. There, you know, they were not, a lot of programmers were just not raising money or not attempting to raise money, and there was no real attempt to organize them to raise money. There was this feeling of entitlement.
Paul, let me ask a question on that point. Has anyone ever put to the board, the old board or the new board, incidentally, what board members' responsibilities are in the area of raising money? I mean, I'm familiar with boards
of many sorts
where board members took a role in raising money.
It's even deeper than that, Clayton, because you have to take into account the fact that the chair, Leslie Kagan, the chair I've known for many years, I know her well, and we've worked together for many, many years, all right? I've worked for her, you know? She's, you know, I've gotten money for doing things, you know, for her around movements. And I can say, or from organizations she was head of or associated with, and I can say that she is a very knowledgeable, intelligent, and I'm sure, I'm told, an excellent administrator. She's coming into a situation where you have a desperately ill organization on the verge of going bankrupt and losing its licenses. And believe me, if they show we can't raise the money to stay on the air, the people will challenge and take away our license.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of their boycott.
Right.
You know, they want to say their boycott is a success, but they don't want to take responsibility for the mess that was left by their boycott, because now she is taking all her time, Leslie Kagan, to try and control programming and micromanage programming, which has never happened in 50 years of this program, of this network, and
mm-hmm.
which not only has never happened in 50 years, is prohibited by the bylaws of the organization,
exactly.
Prohibited by the contracts with the labor unions that the organization has signed, and she is trying to meddle in affairs that nobody, there's no structure for her to do it. That's why they got a fax came under the door, because there's no structure, there's no, and you know, it shows a total lack of knowledge of the Federal Communications Act of 1934, which is the ruling act, and the ones in 96 and subsequent to that, but you should look at the one in 94, I mean the one from 1934, which lays right out that the station manager must have control of the air.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can't have people meddling in the station manager's control of the air.
Right.
That's why Pacifica is structured that way, and that's why a under-the-door fax that could have come from anybody has
right.
to be rejected, has to be by law rejected.
Well, that was my point
she
earlier.
Didn't even know that. So how come she isn't putting her skills, Leslie Kagan, to doing the job that she is cut out to do, and that is, I'm pounding the table, and that is to solve the financial crisis that we're facing.
Well, let's even call it, before we get to the legal aspects, let's call it a matter of courtesy that you send through regular channels this demand, really, in the name of the board. Well, put the board members' names on that document and let us know, incidentally, how the board voted. Was it a unanimous vote? Was it a simple or a supermajority? We have a right, it seems to me, to know that and not to receive a fax from Leslie Kagan that includes the personal pronoun I.
I saw Black Hawk down, and I'll never forget that scene when the general sees that first Black Hawk helicopter crash in the middle of their operation in Mogadishu, and he says, "We've lost the initiative."
Mm.
This is about the initiative. This whole thing yesterday was Democracy Now! Was to try and capitalize on their perceived initiative in this battle, and it sputtered out.
All right. Well, let's, again, la lutte continue. Let's continue the fight.
For and independent radio where the producers are not controlled by some behind-the-scenes leftover bureaucrats.
Woo! All right. Well, listen, we're going to get we got you with news at 55, right, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to get down to that 55 point in just a moment. We're going to share some music with you. But we want to say that once again, quite unfortunately, we lose time in a program like this. There were a number of issues, it seems to me, crucial to discuss today. We did manage to get some of them. Incidentally, throughout the rest of this week, you know, we come. And I will do this, Paul, because we did say we'd do it. Many people have called to ask about the status at the station of Santiago Nieves. As much as I can tell you, because this was a management decision, Santiago is currently on hiatus. I have no idea what the full extent of that will be. I have been asked to do a job. That is what I am doing. When there is any more information, we are not at all reluctant to share it with you. Right now, we're going to get out of here and say to you, we'll talk to you next time. Very important guest will be with us tomorrow to discuss some of the aspects of the Lemick Nelson, Charles Price case. They will be retried, or a retrial has been ordered for them. Also, we want to talk about the new head of the city council and a number of other things, and we urge you to stay tuned. We also urge you, you know, if you really believe in WBAI and just not one of the letters, you say, well, I only support the A in BAI, or I only support the W in BAI. Well, okay, you do that, and we will say, hey, forget you. We want to talk about the people who support WBAI. Do it now. Like I said in the old barbershop, three chairs, no waiting. You don't have to wait for the next drive. Do it now, okay? And you can do that, as Paul Williams points out to me, by pledging with your plastic www.wbai.org. That's all lowercase. Clayton Riley saying thank you for listening. We'll talk to you the next time. This is Aaron Neville.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, just like the river I've been running ever since. Oh, it's been a long, long, long time coming, but I know change will come. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what to say.
Good morning. You're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York City. I'm Paul DiRienzo. American school children can start getting ready for new reading and math tests. President Bush's signature this morning on a far-reaching education bill will also raise standards for teachers. Bush chose Ohio as the site for today's signing before continuing on to education-related appearances in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. He may have been the country's best-known hamburger salesman. Dave Thomas, the founder and senior chairman of the Wendy's hamburger chain, has died at his Florida home. He was 69 years old. He began pitching his own product with a homespun-style TV ad in 1989. There's word of a surrender offer from top officials of the Taliban. A high-ranking security official in Kandahar says top Taliban officials sent a messenger a few days ago saying they wanted to talk about surrendering. Afghan officials are considering the offer. After their first losing session of the new year yesterday, stocks are narrowly mixed in today's early trading. The big corporate names making news this morning include General Motors, which will be formally announcing plans this week to cut thousands of white-collar jobs. Michael Jordan's wife is filing for divorce. Juanita Jordan has been married to the basketball superstar for 12 years, and they have three children. She cites irreconcilable differences. She wants custody of the kids in the family's house near Chicago. In further labor news, I'm told Ford Motor Company is thinking of, by the end of the week, laying off 20,000 workers. A man who tried to set fire to a Pakistani-American family's business 2 days after the September 11th terrorist attacks was sentenced to more than 4 years in prison. Federal prosecutors said James Herrick, who's 32, targeted the restaurant Curry in a hurry. Curry in a Hurry is the name of the restaurant because of the owner's race. Quote, "I got upset over what happened and did something very stupid," Herrick told U.S. Magistrate Ronald Boyce in October when he pled guilty to a civil rights violation. In San Diego, meanwhile, a man who attacked a Middle Eastern gas clerk with a screwdriver on November 18th was sentenced Monday to 6 years in prison. Horacio Plasencia, who's 30, pled guilty to battery during a hate crime, which carries a maximum sentence of 3 years. A previous robbery conviction doubled his sentence under state law. Superior Court Judge Frank Brown did not believe Plasencia was a racist, but, quote, "After 9-1-1, certain rules apply. You have to be sensitive about picking on guys from another country," unquote. President Bush meant no disrespect when he called Pakistanis Pakis. That's according to a White House spokesperson. Bush told reporters today, quote, "We are working hard to convince both the Indians and the Pakis there's a way to deal with their problems without going to war." The term Pakis is considered by many Pakistanis, particularly in Great Britain, to be offensive. Quote, "The president has great respect for Pakistan and for the Pakistani people," White House spokesman Scott McClellan said Tuesday as Bush visited Ohio to sign his education bill. He did not apologize or withdraw the comment, but McClellan noted that Pakistan is a key ally of the U.S.-led war in Afghanistan. The recreation director at the Syracuse area jail could face up to a year behind bars when he's sentenced for improper conduct with a female inmate. Onondaga County prosecutors say they'll request a jail term for 48-year-old Thomas Crow of Manlius, New York, when he's sentenced on February 26th. Crow was charged after complaints were made by three female inmates at the Onondaga County Jail in Jamesville, New York. Crow was convicted Friday of official misconduct and harassment charges. He repeatedly asked one of the women for a date, threatening to interfere with her release status and engage in a sexual relationship with her once she was released. In New York City news, Queens buses are running this morning. Talks between the union representing Queens express bus companies, drivers, and mechanics are scheduled for tomorrow. A wildcat strike by workers at Queens Surface, Triborough Coach, and Jamaica buses for several hours yesterday left thousands of commuters without their usual ride to work. Service resumed for the evening rush. U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White predicts that Zakaria Moussaoui, who's charged in the September 11th terrorist hijackings, may be the only suspect tried in U.S. courts for a direct role in the attacks. A teenager who pled guilty to burning a homeless man to death has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. 15-year-old Robert Velasquez pled guilty to manslaughter and the death of 47-year-old Walter Eichmann. Velasquez and two other boys admitted setting fire to Eichmann as he slept in a stairwell in the Chelsea houses last year. And if you want to see Ground Zero, take a number. Tickets are being handed out to the people who want to step up to the viewing platform to see the former World Trade Center site. Officials say the tickets will help manage the crowd and keep people from having to wait on long lines in the cold. The tickets begin being given out tomorrow. And it's 26 degrees, going up to about the mid-30s in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News Department. Stay tuned for Voices of the South by Dr. Rashid Mayer and Howard Zinn, followed at 11 a.m. by